Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Welcome back. This is Scott Aspenletter sitting in for the great Aaron Flint. Had a great morning this morning so far. We talked about some local stuff. We talked about some economic activity that we're seeing here in Yellowstone County, Billings, and Eastern Montana, and Montana as a whole. Talked about some ag issues. You know, this is such a great show, and it's such a service that Aaron provides, I think, for the state of Montana and for our communities, giving a voice to the issues that are happening in our state and in our communities. And I'm so grateful to have an opportunity to take this seat every once in a while, to be trusted to come in here and talk about what's going on in our communities and in our great state. And so I have a ton of fun doing this, and Caden keeps me off the rails and off the rocks for the most part. I still hit the rocks a couple times, Caden says, this morning. He keeps me humble. But it's a great opportunity also for me to just talk live with some of the people that I talk with on a daily basis in the business community about what's going on in our cities and in our state. And I hope that as we have these conversations, that some of those conversations spark the next coffee talk, and they spark the next discussions around, the local cafes and the water coolers in the office. Attorney General Knudsen, I think, is, in my humble opinion, and I'm a little biased because Austin and I are great friends and grew up together. What Attorney General Knudsen has done in the last 4 years in leading the Department of Justice here in Montana, I think it cannot be understated in the leadership that he's provided in reshaping the way that we deliver justice on the state level, and the impact that even things like the Law Enforcement Academy have trickling down to our local sheriff's departments, our local police departments, and even bigger departments like the Billings PD. He is not understating that the training that was being given at the Montana Law Enforcement Academy was not up to par. And we were putting officers out on the street in these departments and in these roles and not giving them the proper tools to succeed. The way that he has reshaped the Law Enforcement Academy and provided leadership and led the charge to increase investments in public safety. Investments in the Law Enforcement Academy are investments in public safety in our communities, too, because they train our officers. They train the people that protect us. That leadership is impacting every corner and every aspect of the state of Montana, and I'm so grateful for his leadership and his willing to just lean into these hard conversations and these hard issues to really put Montana where it should be as a leader in the Northwest and a leader in our country, not a backbencher. Austin's a great leader. He's a great friend. He's a great American and a great patriot, and we're lucky to have him here in Montana. We're going to take a quick break and then bounce back here. Later in the hour, we're going to have Ty Elkin on, talking about investments in the economy. Montana Talks.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Scott Aspelator in for Aaron Flint this morning. We're going to take a little bit of a pivot and be joined by Jake Penwell. Jake Penwell is one of the directors and leaders of the Yellowstone Air Show. And I want to talk about the Yellowstone Air Show as it's coming back to Billings next year. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you? You're doing a good job this morning, man.
Oh man, let's not get carried away. I still got an hour here to turn this thing into the rocks, but I appreciate it, Jake. I got to tell you, like, I didn't know necessarily what to think or what to expect last year with the air show. And you know, I was kind of that's great. That'll be good for the city. Be cool, whatever. But I went to air shows at Malmstrom Air Force Base at Minot when I was a kid. And, you know, didn't really think much of it. And I enjoyed it. It was cool to see the planes and whatnot. But I went last year, and that was the coolest thing that I think I've done in Billings since I've lived here for 15 years. That was the coolest production, the coolest stage, the coolest setup. And I am so jacked for you guys to bring that back to Billings next year. Maybe give us a little bit about what you're working on and what we can expect next year for the air show.
Man, I really appreciate it. It was definitely a work of passion. As you know, Scott, I've always loved aviation, but when the Blue Angels came to Billings in, oh man, I'm going to mess this up. I think it was in 84 or 88. It was one of those two, and I always get them backwards. But I was there at that show, and I saw the Blue Angels fly, and that was it. It sealed the deal for me. I decided at that moment, and of course, Top Gun came out around that time also, so that had some influence on me as well. But I said, I'm going to be in the Navy. That's it. I'm done. And sure enough, as soon as I got out of high school, as soon as I graduated, I went right into the Navy, and I loved it. Some people say they were in the military and it wasn't for them. I absolutely loved it. It was a great time. And, I'm just one of those. I wanted to pass that on to the next generation, give that opportunity, or at least give that insight and kind of expose the military and some of the cool things within not just the military, but aviation also, and just expose that to a broader demographic of people. In Billings, we don't always get to see that stuff. We're going to see a little bit more when we have the Air National Guard coming in the future, but for the past 20, 30 years, we just haven't had that exposure very much. And in fact, one of the funny things that I kept coming across, and my buddy who I do this with, Matthew McDonald, the aspect that we kept coming across as we planned this last one is there were so many people that just had no idea what an air show was, because it had been 20 plus years since we'd have one. And it was just so much fun. We literally, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due, Matthew really had a vision for, he said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this like an air show has never been done before. And historically, air shows, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it kind of has that fair atmosphere where you go and you get your corn dog, you go and you walk through the static display aircraft, you get to maybe even walk through a C-130 in the bay, the big aircraft where the back door comes down. And you might get to see some of those things and take part in some of that. But it was more of a fair atmosphere, and we wanted to break the mold and make this totally different. And Matthew was lucky enough to go to the Waste Management Tour in Phoenix, the golf tournament down there, and he saw these fantastic, Scott, maybe you can figure out a better term for it, but I keep calling them tents, but it's not really a tent. It's a semi-permanent structure, and he saw those, and he said, we got to bring these to Montana. So started a conversation with the guy that owns that company, and sure enough, we were able to bring them to Montana and bring it to our air show. And we literally won awards. It's the first, we don't know how to put on an air show. We've never done that before. We were able to tap into some of the people, the knowledge base of some of the people who had done the air shows before, but we had no idea what we were doing. But we literally won awards, national awards, for our air show for literally breaking the mold of what an air show traditionally is.
It was awesome, Jake. I mean, I went and watched the show in one of those boxes, and I've already reserved my box for next year's air show. That's how awesome that experience was and that exposure was. It was a cool experience for me. It was cool for my boys and my family. Jake, we got about 60 seconds left to talk about the air show here. Who can we expect coming back? Who can you let out of the gates a year out in advance to say is coming back to Billings for next year's air show?
We have the Blue Angels back, which has already been announced, and
awesome.
That's going to be incredible. And then, you know, I won't reveal too much, but the one thing that I will say is we're going to have a lot of local talent and local, we'll just say local blood that has been lucky enough to get into the military, and the military is going to allow them to bring some of their skills and aircraft, et cetera, back to Billings.
That's awesome.
So, we have a lot of local stuff.
That puts such a personal and Montana touch on such a great event. And I'm excited. Jake, I appreciate you jumping on to talk a little bit about the air show. Folks, if you are around next year, maybe, Jake, what are the dates for next year's air show?
August 22nd and 23rd. Tickets are not on sale just yet. We're going to wait just a little bit longer before we put tickets on sale. But they'll be ready at YellowstoneAirShow.com.
Awesome. That's great, Jake. Thanks for taking the time to jump in. Folks, get your tickets as soon as they come out, because that is something you do not want to miss. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. This is Montana Talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. We're in the home stretch here of Montana Talks. This is Scott Aspenlighter in for Aaron Flint. Appreciate the opportunity to host. And it also gives me an opportunity to pull in some of my closest friends and some of the people that I lean on in the business community to talk about what's going on. And so I'm grateful that Ty Elkin with Allied Investments jumped in and... as we're going to talk a little bit about the economy, the stock markets, the markets, kind of what we're seeing. Been a crazy year so far, Ty, about what's going on with the tariffs and the impacts to the markets and how everything's going. But thanks for jumping in this morning with us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Scott. When you this is my second time, I think, joining you, and when you asked me if I could do it, I was super excited. Just anytime I, like I say, get a chance to spend time with you, but also just visit with the state via the radio.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure for me.
Yeah, so. Maybe let's talk about what we saw the last 6 months. You know, we saw some ups, we saw some real big downs, and then we saw some, okay, we can take a deep breath. We're kind of back to where we started again. Like, what did you see over the last 6 months that's kind of shaping what you're looking at in the next 6 months?
Yeah, good question, Scott. But first of all, if you fell asleep on January 1 and didn't wake up until June 30th and looked at your portfolio, you were likely up 6.5% in 6 months, which historically we'd say we'd be very tickled with that. If you annualize that and you were up 12%, you're hitting, you know, market averages. So really, if you think about that, I think most people would be very happy. But then if you look back and look through really what happened during that stretch, we had extreme volatility, really to a level that we haven't seen in many, many years. Not abnormal to have that sort of volatility, but you know, we saw it, I think, at extreme levels. And as you said, we had geopolitical events that were, it's been a while since we've seen what we've seen. We had tariffs and trade wars at a level that we haven't seen in quite some time. And we really had just a consumer that at one point was very nervous. Market was down 18% at one point. But again, we've had it, it's come all the way back. And I think it allows us, I think the way that we really earn our money in the advisory business during that time frame, it's not based on what stocks we picked coming into it. It's based on how we educated our clients during the middle of it and how we helped them through that emotional time.
Yeah, because I mean, we go have breakfast with a group of guys and you know, we were joking that we needed to do a welfare check on our friend Ty here during the slide. But, you know, I think what you said is just a good reminder as we look at investments in the markets. You know, it's easy in a hyper-politicized environment like we live in today to look at those things and say, oh my God, look at what the president has destroyed the markets, and look at what all of this stuff is doing. And really, the surprising thing to me, and I'm a novice investor. I mean, I'm one step above being able to add 2 + 2 here in my sophistication as it comes to the markets, which is why I rely on you. But I think it emphasizes the fact that you just said, you know, you need to have a level of consistency and stability in your approach these things. And we're all playing the long game, the short game.
Yeah, a long-term view is the only way to invest, in my opinion, in the opinion of the firm that I work with. And that's been proven over time that long-term, the markets return. But really also keep an eye on the economic indicators that really matter. Mm-hmm. On the inflation front, we've been in great shape. We remain at 4 to 4.5% inflation, which is an acceptable level. It's not what the Fed wants at 2%, but it's been acceptable in that 3% range. We're still at 4.2% unemployment, average unemployment rates in the mid-6s, so we're well below averages. Interest rates probably a bit higher than Mr. Trump wants. He's made that clear. And I think most of us in the business would think that having rates as low as they had been over the last, really 5 to 10 years is probably not a healthy economy. You could argue that potentially we could withstand some lowering of the rates. But really, if you look at those economic indicators and where they are, we are very fortunate to live in the United States of America, where we have those things going on working in our favor. And if we really just keep our eye on those indicators, and just ignore some of the noise in the middle, and trust that we've put the right people in office, you're going to be a great investor.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that perspective. You know, I think for the novice guys like me, it's hard to know what those indicators are, and that's why I don't day trade stocks. I'm not wired like that. We know people that do. Guys that we golf with that do day trade and they do well and they do bad. That's a risky business and a business of itself. But when we talk about long-term investments and long-term strategies, I think it's important for all of us to know kind of what are those key indicators that we should be looking at, as you're sitting down and having dinner with your wife and you're seeing the news. Like what are some of the things that for a novice guy are good to look at as an indicator and to pay attention to in the marketplace?
Yeah, well, earnings is really, if you're looking at the markets themselves, what are earnings coming in at? What are companies reporting from an earnings level? And when they're reporting earnings, it's always going to be compared to the quarter before. So you always have some data to go by. But really, are companies making money? Number one, we tend to think if a company isn't making any money, it's very difficult for us to give advice on it. There was times in the dot-com era where you were buying stocks that hadn't made any money yet. That wouldn't have been something that we would have advised on. So are they making money? And then you use that number to develop a price to earnings ratio. The market has historically traded around 18 to 19 times earnings. It's now trading back to 25 times earnings. So you could make the argument that the market at its all-time high that it's at today is still a bit overheated based on where we've been normally.
Sure.
But I think there's also a school of thought that says that potentially we're moving the norm just a bit as technology continues to come into the fold here. We're likely going to see what the historical price to earnings ratio is doing. We're likely to see that grow a bit just because, we're seeing a new wave of technology that we haven't seen in the past. But then you say, well, what do I want to buy? Do I want to buy a company that is a value play because it's trading well below what the market is at 13, 14 times earnings, even below that. If you look at a company like Pfizer, Pfizer's trading at eight times, versus if you look at something like Microsoft's trading at almost 40 times. So you're really, I think, having an understanding of what are you buying, what is it doing based on historical market multiples, and making a decision based on what you're most comfortable with. The lower the valuations, the lower the risk. Higher the valuations, the higher the risk. But of course, also some additional return can come with that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we talk about, technology and new things coming and how technology is reshaping our industries. You see articles kind of sporadically around about how AI is changing industry and how AI is impacting businesses. How are you seeing you know, this new version of artificial intelligence and AI on the investment side of things, mm-hmm. in forecasting and helping people make decisions in the marketplace. And where is the limit with AI? I mean, I think sometimes we maybe get a little bit too comfortable and too overzealous about using technologies like that and putting full faith in. What are you seeing in your experiences as to the, you know, the benefit of AI, but where's the limitation?
Yeah, you know, we tend to think, Scott, that AI itself is going to creep into really all corners of the economy. We are using it in our industry. You're likely using it in your industry. We think that everybody's going to use it and the efficiencies created by it. As we talked about price-to-earning ratios, yeah. historically, we tend to think that will potentially accelerate that. It'll lead to better earnings. And you can make a play of investing directly in AI companies, you know, one like something like NVIDIA, or you can take the approach that you say every company that I own as an investor is going to benefit from AI and make a bet on that happening. What the limitations are, gosh, I don't know how to even answer that, Scott. I think we're already seeing areas that we probably never even thought would happen in our lifetime in yeah. terms of what's happening with AI. And I look at, we have a couple more seasoned, and by seasoned I mean maybe, you know, older than me anyways, advisors in our office that we never thought would embrace AI, and they're embracing it now in a way that's making us all better because we're all becoming more efficient, and that provides better client service for our client service people. Account opening experiences are better for people because of AI. We don't own an AI company in our portfolio, but we know that our company is benefiting from AI, and we trust and believe that the companies that we do own are experiencing the same thing. I wish I could tell you, you know, maybe how yeah. far can that go, but gosh, I actually would like to believe that that we just don't know that yet.
Yeah, no, and I would tend to agree with you. I mean, just in seeing what it's done in our business, and we're conservative guys. You know, I'm an old school guy. I don't trust the robots necessarily yet. I'm not a cryptocurrency guy. I want to see and touch what I own and what I invest in. And so I'm probably going to be late to the game on things like AI and stuff like that. But man, I think you're right that we have just scratched the surface on where this is going to go and what it's going to lead to as far as developments and improvements and inefficiencies in companies. And it's interesting to hear that perspective about from an investor's standpoint, what that means for the market. We're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna come back with Ty from Allied Investment Advisors, and we're gonna talk a little bit more about Fed rates and kind of what we see coming, what Ty sees coming in the next 6 months, and what we all should be paying attention to in the marketplace. So, quick break. Thanks for joining us, Montana Talks. We'll be right back.
This is where Montana Talks at. With Lane Nordland.
This week I'm in San Diego for the Cattle Industry Summer Business Meeting. And cattle industry participants from across the nation are weighing in on key policy issues. And while there's plenty on their agenda, folks are especially celebrating and discussing the passage of the Big Beautiful Bill, calling it a major win for the cattle industry in rural America. Colin Woodall is CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
NCBA was very supportive of getting the One Big Beautiful Bill passed for multiple reasons, but the leading reason is because of the tax provisions included. With so many of those slated to expire at the end of 2025, it was important that we provide a little certainty to cattle producers, and that's exactly what this bill did on everything from Section 179, bonus depreciation, to the death tax. We have been able to provide additional protection for cattle producers when it comes to taxes, but the biggest win is we were able to take these provisions and make them permanent. Usually we have 8 to 10 years, but to be able to make it permanent gives us a lot of certainty moving forward, and that's why we're very pleased with both the House and Senate for the work they've done and with the President for signing that bill on the 4th of July.
But the Montana Farmers Union opposes the bill, saying it breaks the Rural-Urban Coalition that's long worked to support family farms and rural communities across the nation. I'm Wayne Northland.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. This is Scott Aspenlighter in for Aaron Flint. And we're joined here this hour by Ty Elkin with Allied Investment Advisors here in Billings, talking about kind of the markets. We talked a lot here the last segment about, you know, kind of what happened the first 6 months and kind of the roller coaster and investor expectations and things like that. As we go forward, one of the things I want to talk about is you know, what you see coming in the next 6 months. And one of the things that plays into what you see coming in the next 6 months, I would imagine, is kind of what the Feds are going to do. You know, President Trump has been very vocal about his thoughts on interest rates and the Fed's setting of the rates and or not reducing, seeing rate reductions come. But here just a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we had the president of the Federal Reserve from Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Federal Reserve in Billings. And he made the comment that he foresees a possible rate reduction. He didn't indicate what, but a possible rate reduction may be coming in September and in the fourth quarter of 2026. And so, Ty, what's your perspective on that? I mean, there are wildly varying opinions on what rates should and shouldn't be, and I think we got kind of fat, dumb, and happy when rates were at all-time historic lows, but we also realized that maybe that drove inflation to a level that we did not expect. What's your perspective as a former banker and now an investment advisor as to the Fed and the Fed's actions on rates and kind of where we sit today?
Yeah, Scott, first off, would say that coming into the year, first part of the year, the expectations were anywhere from 4 to 6 rate cuts throughout the year, based on where the economy was at that point. We have been very fortunate to have the strong economy that we have. It's outperformed, I think, where they anticipated it was. So those bets are going down. Now the markets are anticipating at most, I think, 2 moves between now and the end of the year, with some potential continued moves on into 2026. With the first one, like you say, potentially coming in September. But with the mandate being unemployment and inflation, which we talked about earlier, being we have very strong numbers in those areas. We've got a strong stock market. We've got very good earnings at the corporate level. It does beg for the question of what will be the trigger that would really force them to bring it down. Trump strong arming them, I don't think works. I don't think, at least, it works with Mr. Powell. It doesn't seem like he listens to that very much. But you could see, relative to our peer countries, we are above them. And there, I think there's an argument of we could bring them down some, which really helps us as a country from our debt load. We're obviously, you know, record numbers there. And as we reprice treasuries, the longer that we stay up at this level, the tougher it is for us to continue to pay the interest on treasuries. So I think, if anything, it maybe just the fact that we say, hey, we can bring rates down a bit here. It's not potentially necessary to, if you're just looking at those short-term mandates of inflation and unemployment. But if you start to look at the long haul and maybe the bigger picture of what's happening, on the Treasury level, I would like to see rates come down some, both for the consumer and for our country. But again, I think it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. I mean, it would also be really great if people in Washington, D.C. just quit adding to the debt, to the national debt. It would be really great if we could get Washington, D.C. to balance a budget. It would be really great if we could get our country to get back on track in spending within their means and not, you know, having parties in D.C. and blowing our treasury apart. I mean, that I think is the, it's easy to say, you know,
interest rates are the problem, and God dang it, Powell, you got to cut the interest rates. And I wouldn't argue that maybe we shouldn't be talking about that, and that, the president doesn't have a point to an extent there. But I think that's also kind of redirecting some of the true problem, which is we got to quit spending money in this country that we don't have. We got to quit printing money, and we got to start living within our means and within a budget. And that will also have a very positive impact on the economy and very positive impact on the value of the dollar and what a dollar is worth in your wallet if we quit adding to the national debt. So, you know, that also needs to be a part of the dang conversation, and it continues to be forgotten or conveniently lost in Congress. And you know, God, I hope that our delegation can continue to push for something like that. You know, Montana lives within a balanced budget. We have a balanced budget mandate. I think it works great for our state, and it has for a long time. We don't have debt here. But, man, nationally, we got to get that figured out. So, you know, kind of pivoting from that, as we look ahead into the next 6 months, Ty, what are you seeing as far as things that you're keeping an eye on in the markets for the next 6 months, and what are you looking for as positive indicators and things that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, but I think the impacts of tariffs on inflation over the next 6 to 12 months, I think, will really be the driver of a lot of that discussion. We're just really scratching the surface there of what impact that may or may not have. You and I both know we had local companies that were describing some of the concerns that they had and some of the, you know, very real numbers that they were seeing as to what tariffs might bring to them from a, you know, cost of goods number, and that likely gets passed on. So I think really seeing what happens with inflation as a result of tariffs will be very key. And that will drive earnings. So I think that will be the area that we'll continue to focus on. Our shop is we're value investors, meaning that we tend to look for companies that are trading at lower multiples that pay dividends, grow dividends, and we do think that this is the time to really look for those companies that have room on their balance sheet and in their P&L to withstand some of those pressures. So we'll be watching that very closely. And again, if we continue to see what we're seeing now, which has been a confident consumer, strong company earnings, very low inflation relative to where we've been historically, I think we're going to be in great shape. We don't expect to see double-digit returns in the stock market for the next couple of years. We just came off of 2 years of 20-plus returns, and we think that good thing at some point, maybe that great thing at some point becomes just good. But it's still a good story to tell. If the market returns 8 to 12% over the next couple of years, I think we all would be very happy, especially those of us that lived through the market over the last couple of years and experienced, you know, significantly higher returns than that.
Yeah, no, that's a good perspective. What, as you look at the sectors, you know, in the marketplace, what are some of the sectors that you see as good opportunities, and places to really see some traction and some gains?
Yeah, consumer staples and healthcare are trading at very low multiples to historical numbers. There's some very, very good companies in those sectors that we think provide opportunity. The technology and communication sector is the sector that's really led the market over the last 3 years, trading at multiples that we haven't seen for quite a while. We think there continues to be risk in that area. So if where we're looking for opportunities is in sectors outside of that.
Sure.
We've traded away from those here recently. Look for opportunities during the tariff volatility to jump back in, but really it happened so quickly, I think it was very difficult for people to jump back in there. But we do see we still see a lot of opportunity in some of those other areas. Companies like Pepsi are trading at very low multiples. We mentioned Pfizer earlier. very low multiple. FedEx is trading at a very low multiple. Tariffs impacted them initially.
Yeah.
And then also we're starting to see with Amazon shipping as much as they have, we're really trying to identify, well, how many shipping companies do we have? It used to be UPS and FedEx, but now we have Amazon actually at number two.
Yeah.
And FedEx has been punished because of that, but we still think it's a tremendous company.
Yeah.
That has significant value over the next several years.
Yeah. No, that's interesting to hear. I mean, Amazon is such an enigma. It has went through such meteoric rise in this country. And I mean, hell, I think my wife knows the Amazon delivery guy by name at my house. There's probably a package when I get home at lunch. There's probably one waiting on the door. We're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back and finish it up with Ty here after this break. And where I want to go is talking about some of the sectors that we see here in Montana, some of the ones that really touch us in agriculture and natural resource development, things like that. But we're gonna pivot a little bit to how this impacts Montana. But appreciate you turning in. Stick with us. We're going to be right back after the break. Montana Talks.
Hi, I'm
broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back for the last segment. We're in the home stretch. Caden is ready to go get some breakfast. I can see it from here. But we're going to finish up with Ty Elkin from Allied Investment Advisors here in Billings, talking about, you know, kind of the markets and some of the things to be looking for as we head into the tail end of the year. And one of the questions that I had for you, Ty, Montana is still a tourism state. We're a natural resource extraction state, and we're an ag state. I mean, ag is still the number one driver in Montana. And, yeah, there has been a lot of movement and a lot of investment in ag tech, and, you know, companies like John Deere and Case and International and those types of things investing in ag tech to really take farming and agriculture into the 21st century. You know, what are you seeing in that space from those, you know, kind of historic companies that built this country, you know, John Deere's and the Cases and the, you know, the industrial companies, where are they falling in all of this?
Well, I would first disclose that our company as a whole, our clients own John Deere. It's been a staple of ours for many, many years. I think for two reasons. Number one, we think it's an outstanding company that has a history of great earnings, but we also, as we travel Montana and work with our clients, when they see that they own John Deere, they usually puts a smile on their face. So
yeah.
Our clients like to see us holding it. And you make a really good point, Scott. What's happening on the technology side and the impact that's having for the farmer and rancher, I think I think it provides tremendous opportunity for them. It does also beg the question of what does that do to their cost. I think I've always marveled at how a farmer can continue to make money when the cost of the implements themselves continues to go up as it does. But we do know that it drives efficiency. So yep. I think that at least I would have to hang my hat on the fact that they can now do more work in less time and be more efficient, which helps production. I think that's, you know, likely what makes it work from that perspective. I think keeping an eye on energy is going to be very important. What's happening for the cost of fuel itself? We've seen that come down some in Trump's term, probably not as much as I think some of us anticipated, not as much as Trump would have liked.
Yeah.
But again, it's only been 6 or 7 months. But I think seeing lower fuel costs costs will really, really help our Montana producers. And gosh, if we can keep cattle prices up, you know, where they are. I mean, it's fun for us to see that we're going to visit one of our cattle producers in one of our weekly travels, because we know that they're going to be in a heck of a mood. And we just love seeing that.
Yeah. No, you and I come from rural America, and we have a lot of friends in the ag space, and it's great to see the guys on the cattle side really doing well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, God knows they've got kicked in the gut plenty of times over the last decade.
Yeah.
You know, the folks in the ag industry are amazing to me. I mean, a lot of the guys that I grew up with are back on the family farms and the family ranches and running those opportunities or running those operations. And I just tip my hat to what they do every day. I mean, golly, I had one of my close friends tell me one day, he's like, you know, I don't need to go to Vegas and gamble because I do it every year. I go to the bank and I ask for an operating loan. I put it all in the ground, and I hope to God that he doesn't bring the white combine in to wipe my crops out. I hope that the market stays stable, and I gamble that by the end of the year, the things that I have no control over don't wreck my operation.
Yeah.
And they do it every year. They go back. And it's amazing to me the commitment and dedication that those folks have to the trade and the craft that they have in feeding our country and leading the agricultural economy here in Montana. Ty, it's been great having you on, and I really appreciate you taking the time. These are fun conversations for me to have with guys that I like and opportunities to talk about some things that maybe we don't always talk about on this show with the economy. And any last words for the listeners about, you know, what to pay attention to and maybe where they can find you at Allied Investment Advisors?
Yeah, well, I would say in terms of where to pay attention, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention diversification is still so important in any investing that you're doing. Be sure you're exposed to a number of different sectors. You're typically going to be right 60% of the time and wrong 40% of the time. And you can withstand that if you're properly diversified and allocated. So I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. Our company, Allied Investment Advisors, we're located right here in Billings, Montana. We do work most of the state on a weekly basis. There's six or seven of us that travel out. We sit face-to-face with our clients. We think it's very important that's part of our business model. We're independently owned and operated. We make all of our own investment decisions right here in-house. Our chief investment officer is actually housed out of a one-man shop in Conrad because he wanted to live on his family farm and continue that family legacy as part of his world. So we hope that you have an opportunity to call us if you ever want to visit. Again, it's Allied Investment Advisors right here in Billings, Montana.
Perfect. Thanks a bunch, Ty, for joining us. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank my wife, Heather, and my boys, Benny, Blake, and Cannon, for giving me the opportunity to go out and do crazy things like this, talk on the radio. Love you guys. Thanks, Aaron, for the opportunity. Thanks for listening. Montana Talks.